Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at a stack of sources you sent over about, well, the merger of two fields that could not seem more different.
Right. We're talking about quantum computing and the global electric power grid.
And this isn't some far-off theory anymore. Our mission today is to really unpack how the strange rules of quantum mechanics are moving out of the lab.
And out of the super-cooled cryogenic lab, yeah.
And moving directly into the control rooms that manage our electricity. The high-stakes, real-world stuff.
It's this incredible convergence point, and it promises to solve what is, frankly, an optimization nightmare that is gripping energy operators right now.
What's driving that nightmare?
In a word, volatility. As the grid gets greener, you know, more wind, more solar, the whole system becomes exponentially harder to balance and to manage.
And that's where quantum comes in.
Ooh.
We're talking about using it to solve problems that our current supercomputers, even the best ones, They can't handle them.
Exactly. And this whole push is being framed by programs like the U.S. Department of Energy's GRIDQ.
Right. That was launched in 2024. Grid Research, Integration, and Deployment for Quantum.
And they are laser focused on one core challenge. It sounds a little bureaucratic, but it's brutally hard. It's called the unit commitment problem.
The unit commitment problem. Okay. So that's the villain of our story today.
It absolutely is. The UC problem, as it's called, is this massive, complex, combinatorial task. You're basically deciding the perfect 24-hour schedule for every single power generator in a regional grid.
So which ones to turn on, which to turn off, and when? All to meet the demand at the lowest possible cost.
At the minimum possible cost. And the complexity isn't just the demand side.
No, it's all the constraints, right?
Precisely. You have to factor in things like minimum up and down times for a power plant, thermal limits, ramp rates.
What's a ramp rate?
It's the speed at which a generator can increase its power output. And you have thousands of these constraints. Classical systems, they have to use these complex mathematical approximations to even get close to a solution.
And the number of possible combinations just gets overwhelming.
It overwhelms even the fastest supercomputer on the planet. Which, you know, brings us to the first big question. If the problem is this combinatorial explosion, why is quantum exponentially better for this specific kind of problem?
Right. Qubits versus bits.
It all comes down to the fundamental physics. Your classical computer uses a bit. It's a transistor. It's a zero or it's a one. And that's it.
So if you add more bits, your computing power just, it goes up linearly, a straight line.
A one-to-one ratio. It's incredibly reliable, almost no errors. And we use it for, well, everything in modern life.
But quantum is a totally different beast.
Completely different. It uses the qubit, and the qubit leverages two core quantum phenomena that are frankly mind-bending, superposition and entanglement.
Okay, so superposition, that's the idea that a qubit can be both a zero and a one at the same time until you look at it.
Exactly. It exists in this combination of states. And then entanglement means that these qubits can be deeply intrinsically linked. What happens to one instantly affects the other, no matter how far apart they are.
So let's connect that back to the grid problem. If one qubit can be in multiple states at once, what does that give you in terms of speed?
It means your computational power doesn't scale linearly. It scales exponentially.
Exponentially.
A system with n qubits can explore 2^n possible solutions all at the same time, in parallel.
So, like finding the shortest route in a maze. A classical computer tries one path, then the next, then the next.
Right. While a quantum computer, in a sense, tries all possible paths simultaneously.
And that's the fundamental leap. IonQ had a really powerful example of this in the sources.
They did. They pointed out that a system of around 60 high-quality qubits, just 60, could run certain algorithms in a few minutes that would take the world's fastest supercomputer billions of years.
Billions of years. I mean, that's not just faster. That's a different reality computation.
It's a step change. It's the kind of power you need to manage a grid that's constantly changing with the wind and the sun.
Okay, that all sounds incredible. So if it's that powerful, why aren't we running everything on quantum computers already? There has to be a catch.
And it is a massive catch. We are firmly in what's called the noisy intermediate scale quantum era, the NISQ era.
Noisy? This doesn't sound good.
It's not. These qubits are unbelievably fragile. They suffer from something called decoherence.
Which means they just lose their quantum state.
Right.
a little bit of vibration, a stray magnetic field.
And the whole calculation is ruined.
Yep.
Exactly. And they need these extreme conditions. We're talking temperatures colder than deep space for superconducting systems or ultra-high vacuums for trapped ion systems.
So you're trying to run the most critical infrastructure we have on hardware. That's, I mean, it's essentially a house of cards.
Yeah.
One stray atom and it all comes crashing down.
That's a perfect way to put it. High error rates, this environmental sensitivity, It all means you can't just run long, complex calculations on them. Not yet.
And that fragility, that actually dictates the entire strategy for how you solve a problem like unit commitment.
It does. And that brings us right to the breakthrough demonstration.
Okay, tell us about this landmark moment.
So this happened in mid-2025. It was this huge collaboration between IonQ, the hardware company, and the power systems experts at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, or RNL.
And this was the moment that proved you could bridge that gap, right, between the fragile quantum hardware and a messy real-world problem.
That's exactly what it was. It was a proof of concept.
And IonQ's whole thing is trapped ions. What makes that specific technology a good fit for this kind of optimization?
So they use their 36-qubit Forte Enterprise quantum computer. The big advantage with trapped ions is quality and connectivity.
Okay.
They have incredibly high fidelity, like 99.9% for a single qubit operation, which means very few errors. But more importantly, they have what's called full connectivity.
Meaning any qubit can talk to any other qubit directly.
Yes. And for a complex problem like UC, where everything is connected to everything else, that's a massive advantage. It makes it much easier to map the problem onto the hardware.
But even with that great hardware, they still couldn't run a really deep quantum circuit without it collapsing.
Right. The decoherence problem is still there.
Which is why they had to use a hybrid strategy. It wasn't purely quantum.
And that's the key takeaway for the NIC era. The solution was a hybrid quantum classical algorithm.
Okay, so the classical computer is still doing a lot of the work.
It's doing the heavy lifting, the long, noisy parts. It handles this iterative loop. The quantum processor acts more like a specialized accelerator.
A GPU for quantum problems.
A perfect analogy. You encode the cost function of the UC problem into a short, manageable quantum circuit. The quantum computer rapidly spits out a bunch of candidate schedules.
And then the classical computer looks at those results, adjusts the parameters, and sends it back to the quantum computer for another go.
Round and round it goes. The classical computer is like the air traffic controller, keeping the very fast, very fragile quantum engine focused on the one thing it's exponentially good at.
But it wasn't just the hybrid approach. The sources said the algorithm itself was a big deal.
It was. They used something called a Qwete-based variational algorithm, quantum imaginary time evolution. And the key thing here is that it's just inherently more tolerant to noise.
Let's pause on that.
Mm.
Because the sources had a really specific number that jumped out. This Qwete approach used 85% fewer two-qubit gates than the standard algorithm, QAOA. Why is that number 85% so important?
It's everything. Because every single gate, every operation you perform is another opportunity for an error to creep in. It's more time the qubit has to hold its fragile quantum state.
So a shorter circuit means a much higher chance of success.
A much, much higher chance. By cutting the number of gates by 85%, they dramatically reduced the circuit depth. That meant they could actually finish the calculation before that house of cards collapsed. Right. That 85% figure basically bought the entire NIC era years of relevance.
It really puts it in perspective. So what was the actual scale they tested?
They successfully found optimal solutions for a scaled-down UC problem. It involved 26 power generators over a 24-hour period.
So optimizing one full day. Okay, but 26 generators doesn't sound huge. A big transmission system operator, a TSO, why should they care about a test that small?
Because the goal wasn't speed. A classical solver can handle 26 generators just fine. The landmark moment was proving the end-to-end concept.
The whole workflow.
The whole workflow. They successfully took a complex, constrained grid problem, translated it for a quantum machine, ran it on actual hardware, and got correct, near-optimal answers. It's the framework that will scale up as the hardware gets better.
And that sets the stage for the global race. Because IonQ and Oak Ridge have this milestone, but they are not the only ones in this fight.
Not by a long shot. It is a fiercely competitive global field. And you have different companies betting on totally different technologies.
Let's start with D-Wave. They're always in the headlines because their qubit counts are just astronomical compared to everyone else.
Right. D-Wave uses a different approach called quantum annealing. These are specialized machines built only for optimization. And yes, they have systems with over 5,000 superconducting qubits.
5,000 versus IonQ's 36. On paper, that seems like no contest.
It seems like a slam dunk. But the sources show it really wasn't, at least not for this unit commitment problem.
So what happened? Did that raw scale just not deliver?
It didn't. A 2025 study benchmarked D-Wave's hybrid solver against a top classical solver, a program called Grobe, on a full-scale UC problem, and the results were clear.
Right.
D-Wave did not outperform the classical solver, not in solution quality and not in speed.
Wow, so that really underscores the point that just counting qubits is the wrong way to look at it.
It is absolutely the wrong metric. Quality, fidelity, how the qubits are connected, the chip's topology, that matters so much more than just the raw number, especially now. Quality over quantity.
So who else is in this race in the gate model camp?
Well, you have the giant IBM. They're partnered with a major European utility, EON.
And they're using superconducting qubits like D-Wave, but in a gate-based model.
Correct. They're currently using 27 qubit systems, and they're looking at things like energy pricing and grid complexity. They have a really ambitious public roadmap. They're targeting quantum advantage by 2029.
And there's another approach coming out of France, right? With neutral atoms.
That's Pasqual. They use neutral atom processors, and they're scaling very fast already, over 100 atoms. They're working with the French utility EDF.
And their focus is a little different.
A little different. They're really targeting renewable integration and the chaos of electric vehicle charging, so more on the distribution and demand response side of the grid.
So you have trapped ions, quantum annealers, superconducting qubits, neutral atoms.
What's the big picture here? If you're a TSO, where do you place your bet?
The big insight is that you probably don't bet on just one. This isn't going to be a zero-sum game. These different technologies are going to coexist, each finding its own, you know, sweet spot.
IonQ has the connectivity. D-Wave has the raw scale for certain problems. And IBM is pushing that full-stack scalable approach. The lesson for... Focus on the real benchmarks. Fidelity, connectivity, and coherence time.
Which brings us to the real-world implication. Let's make this concrete. What does all of this mean for an organization like Denmark's TSO, Energinet?
Energinet is the perfect case study. They're living in the future right now. Denmark is targeting 100% renewable electricity by 2030.
100%.
Imagine trying to balance a national grid that relies almost entirely on intermittent wind and solar. It requires a level of optimization that is just... It's beyond what we can currently do.
And for the next, say, 5 years, quantum isn't going to be running the whole show on its own.
No, not yet. In the near term, these quantum tools are going to be decision support systems. They'll run alongside the classical systems in the control room, providing better or faster options. It's that hybrid bridge, but applied to the real world.
Okay, so what are the specific super hard computational jobs that quantum is going to take on first?
The sources lay out four big ones. First is grid planning. Optimizing where you build new transmission lines or where you place massive battery storage systems, and doing that under hundreds of different what-if scenarios.
Okay, but second?
Real-time operations. Specifically, something called contingency analysis. That's evaluating what happens if a major power line or generator goes down an N1 outage. Quantum could make that analysis almost instantaneous.
Because when a crisis hits, you need the optimal plan to restore power in minutes, not hours.
Exactly. Third is market optimization. The process of clearing the energy market is this gigantic optimization problem with hundreds of thousands of bids. Making that faster and more efficient means lower costs for everyone.
And the fourth.
Sector coupling. This is a big one for the future. Optimizing how the electricity grid interacts with, say, the gas grid and heating systems, especially with power-to-X facilities that create green hydrogen, you're trying to maximize the use of every last renewable electron.
The benefits here seem huge. You're hitting reliability, cost, and the climate all at once.
They are immense. Better optimization means lower generation costs, for sure. But here's the number from the sources that just made my jaw drop. Currently, over 60% of generated energy is lost.
60%. Lost between the power plant and the end user.
Lost to things like heat, transmission inefficiencies, and critically, curtailment. That's when you have to tell a wind farm to just shut down, because the grid can't handle the power. If quantum can cut down even a fraction of that 60% loss, the economic and environmental savings are just staggering.
So what's the timeline? When does that 26 generator test case become a full-scale national grid solution?
Hardware scaling is the bottleneck. IonQ is projecting they'll have systems with 100 to 200 high-fidelity qubits by 2026.
It's only 26. That's right around the corner.
It is. And if they hit that target, they believe those machines could start tackling real grid-scale unit commitment problems.
So we're moving into that relevant scale very, very quickly.
We are. But for the biggest, most complex problems, TSOs will eventually need fault-tolerant quantum computers. We're talking millions of noisy physical qubits working together to create a few thousand perfect logical qubits.
And that's further out.
That's generally seen as being toward the end of the decade, into the 2030s. But the message for organizations like EnergyNet is clear. You have to start now. You have to build expertise and run small pilots, just like Eon is doing with IBM.
This has been a fascinating deep dive. Let's try to sum up the key takeaways. The big one for me is that the IonQ and RRNL demonstration wasn't about speed. It was about proving the viability of that hybrid quantum classical approach.
That's the bridge. It's the essential ingenious bridge from the fragile NISQ machines we have today to the fault-tolerant ones we want tomorrow.
And critically, it proved that these messy, real-world problems can actually be mapped and solved on today's hardware, largely thanks to those algorithmic breakthroughs, like QN, that let them dodge the whole decoherence problem.
Exactly. They made the calculation short enough to work.
So we've focused on unit commitment, which is already a huge challenge.
Mm.
But you hinted at an even harder problem. Where does this go next?
Right. So the sources show quantum can handle scheduling optimization. But the real computational monster in grid management is something called AC optimal power flow, or ACOPF.
The Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail. ACOPF is what's known as a non-convex problem. What that means is the difficulty explodes as it gets bigger. The math has all these peaks and valleys, and it's computationally impossible for a classical computer to guarantee it has found the absolute best solution.
So what do they do now? They just simplify the physics?
They have to. They use approximations and linearize the power flow equations, which cost efficiency and introduces margins of error. They find an answer, but not necessarily the best answer.
Okay.
But if quantum computing can tackle the full unsimplified ACOPF problem, then it's a whole new ballgame.
Yeah.
Quantum computers won't just be optimizing our existing grid.
They could let us design a fundamentally different type of grid.
Exactly. We could design entirely new, more complex, vastly more efficient grid architectures based on calculations that, until now, have been considered completely impossible.
That shifts the whole paradigm from computational compromise to computational possibility. So we'll leave you with this final thought. What's the computational barrier in your industry, whether you're in logistics or drug discovery or finance? What long-standing problem like ACOPF might just crumble when these exponential speedups become routine? What system that you rely on is just one breakthrough algorithm away from a total transformation?
Thank you for joining us for the deep dive.
We'll see you next time.